India is, of course, one country, but we have 29 different sub-markets in it.
Right.
We have different cultures, different cuisines. You are mostly competing with local brands. Digital commerce is a very interesting development in India.
It is not an enabler.
It's not an enabler. But when you come to digital commerce, the whole cycle is different. Our plans are monthly and our executions are daily. The way our organization is designed today, it's designed for an elephant to move very steadily.
Yeah.
And I need to move from an elephant who is moving steadily to an elephant who can run like a leopard. The core task in front of me and my people is to make everyday cooking easy. Over 60% of the consumers today are millennials and Gen Zs.
Mm.
Now they come in with a whole different mindset, and they also come in with a much lower level of knowledge as far as cooking is concerned.
Hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of professionals, technologies, disruptors, investors, and of course, philanthropists, whose disruptions have delivered on the purpose that they have embarked on. Their mission is as strong as their values. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their inspirations, businesses, professional lives, pivot moments and turning points, and of course, the little joys of life and work. It is as much about their professional life journeys as also about their personal journeys too. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. In this episode, we're going to focus on something which is very embedded in our lives: our food tastes, our consumer preferences, and of course, regional tastes, which kinds of demonstrates the diversity of India's deep-rooted culture itself. For this episode, I'll be talking to someone who has been tracking this like the back of his palm. MTR Foods has been at the vantage point. It has a front row seat and it has a ringside view of the changes that has happened in India and is also happening as we talk. For instance, quick commerce, rising aspirations, upward mobility, rising spending ability, and of course, regional tastes moving geographies that they're not really present previously. To talk about all of this and much more, I have with me Sanjay Sharma, Managing Director and CEO, Orkla India, a portfolio company of Norwegian investment company, Orkla ASA. Delighted to have you here, Sanjay.
A very good morning to you, Gaurav, and thank you for making me an unusual suspect.
Absolutely delighted to have you. You know, let's start off with something which is very fundamental, very basic, but is deeply, consequential for your line of business. We are coming off almost 2 years of a spice deflation cycle. How have you navigated this?
Well, I think first I must tell you that, commodities and commodity cycles are part of our business, right? So it's not a new event for us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the way it occurred for us for the last 2 years was a little unusual, because we have seen prices of spices go up and go down,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes not so sharply, but go up and go down. But the last 2 years have been very unusual. We saw a very, very sharp deflation at the back of two massive crops of spices.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you track agriculture, you will understand that you never get consecutive crops which are very good. A great crop, prices will crash because there's a lot of supply of product in the market. Farmers typically get disheartened with prices dropping. So acreages drop, and that results with lesser acreage, and therefore the next year volumes going down, and that leads to prices going up.
Right.
This time, for the first time, and I keep talking it about it like a black swan event,
right.
It'll lose way of determining it, but still a black swan, because we experienced two consecutive years and the prices over the 2 years dropped almost 30%.
Right.
Now, We are in a business of spices. There are two kinds of spices that we sell. We sell what we call as pure spices, mm-hmm. which are near commodity. We just take the chili, we grind it, we pack it, and we give it to the consumer. And the second is what we call as the blended spices or masalas or powders, whichever way you want to call it, which is a specific recipe for a particular dish or a generic dish that you would like to make. There's no problem with the masala pricing because it's like any other product. You either have the expertise to make it at home or you don't. And if you don't have, then you typically go behind a trusted brand. But it's the other segment, which is the pure spices, which is very easy to do. I mean, this is not toothpaste or a shaving cream that you don't know how to make in your house. Making chili is the easiest thing. And my mother and probably your mother and grandmothers have been doing it forever. So they buy the product from the market, they roast it in their house, they grind it in a mixie, and the thing is ready. So in this segment, the consumer is typically not willing to pay an excessive premium for the products, and therefore the margins of the products are also low. What we see is that if you don't maintain a 10% premium over the raw commodity, you tend to lose volume. So whenever the prices crash, we actually mimic the prices in the mandis and the wholesalers and keep a 10% premium. So 30% deflation meant that we had to drop our prices by 30%. And typically, that ended up impacting the revenue cadence of the business.
But did it squeeze your margins too significantly?
It doesn't squeeze your margins because raw material costs also tend to come down. So you are maintaining a balanced premium, which tends to protect your margins out. The only thing is that when commodities become very cheap, we also see a plethora of small brands, retailer brands come into the market because it's very easy to make it.
So D2C brands, do you see, you know, they're eating into your market in some way?
It's D2C, it's actually mostly small retailer brands.
Right.
This market is a very unusual market rather than other markets in foods. And, you know, we are an unusual player in this unusual market because we say that we are a local brand.
Mm-hmm.
And tastes and flavors, as you know, in India. India is, of course, one country, but we have 29 different sub-markets in it.
Right.
We have different cultures, different cuisines. So because of that, you are mostly competing with local brands. So you're not competing with large multinational brands out here. So our market is very local. Our competition is also very local.
But what about the informal economy? What about the informal market in spices? Does that also affect you when there are price fluctuations or deflation?
Yeah, as I said that, you know, when the cost of buying 1 kilo chili, I mean, which typically sells at 140 to 160 rupees a kilo in the mandi, comes down to 70 rupees a kilo, your ability to get into the business with very low capital allocation happens. Therefore, what you see is a plethora of small brands emerging. When the prices go up, let's say now the price of chili is 270 rupees a kilo, your 100 kilo chili is going to cost you about 27,000 rupees.
So during this deflation cycle, your top line got affected.
Yes.
Did it affect your, of course, when the top line gets affected, it does affect, it has a consequence for the cash flow. That is one side of it. That's the most obvious side. But did it affect your expansion plans? Did it affect your plans to scale? And if it did, how?
Not really. It didn't really affect our plans to scale. I think we just needed to restructure the orientation of and the focus of the organization. And I think that we have been doing slowly as well. We have moved to a more volume-based method of selling. So
right.
If you really look at through the last 3 to 4 years, we have actually scaled up our volume performances. It went up from about 1.8% to now about 6%.
Right.
And if you follow the FMCG trend as declared by Nielsen or some of the other people, FMCG volumes expanded something between 4 to 5%. So we were pretty much in the top quartile of volume expansion.
Right.
But because we had taken price drops, our revenue growths were actually much slower than the 5.9%.
Than the volume growth. So the volume growth did not, the revenue growth did not reflect or tail the volume growth.
The revenue growth possibly could not because typically when you look at FMCG company performances, you do see volume growths, but you are also always enabled by some level of inflation.
Right.
So a price-led growth of, let's say a volume-led growth of 4 to 5% ended with a price-led growth of 5 to 6%, right, ends up with an 11% double-digit business performance. In our case, it was 5.9% volume development, but price development was negative. So we ended up with a softer price development of about 4 to 5%.
So let's talk about something that is now, you know, which has become a part of our lives, particularly in urban India and also in tier 2, tier 3, and is now spreading across in rural India too as smartphone penetration increases. Is about digital commerce. What about your portfolio of products and how present are you in digital commerce through the platforms or omni-channels, or what is it, how are you adopting to it and what has been the adoption pace?
Yeah, I think first I would like to say that digital commerce has been, is a very interesting development in India. I think it's very unusual. We saw e-commerce come in from the West, but quick commerce really was a concept from India.
But has it helped your distribution or affected your distribution?
I don't see that as an enabler for distribution.
It is not an enabler.
It's not an enabler. It's actually a creation of a whole ecosystem in a market. See, when modern trade came into being, what it actually did was just replace general trade.
That's right.
The same consumers who were shopping in general trade went to modern trade outlets and bought. So you lost volumes in general trade, but you gained volumes in modern trade. But when digital commerce has come in, of course, there has been a little bit of movement of consumers from general trade and modern trade into digital commerce. And I'm using digital commerce in a little wide manner, Gaurav. But what digital commerce also offers you is a targeted set of young consumers who have the money. But it also offers the food processing industry a whole possibility of creating new business models and new markets. Let me give you an example. Traditionally, because general trade and modern trade had long cycle times, right? Which means that from the time I produce to last time I supply, till the consumer comes and buys us in monthly cycles, typical cycle times to consumers were anything between 45 days to 60 days.
Right.
Right? With digital commerce, those cycle times have crashed. Now today, therefore, traditionally, the food processing industry made mostly large shelf life products. And our ability to create cold chains and deliver short shelf life products was not really viable because, you know, India power outages were uncertain and your products would get spoiled. So your ability to enter into short shelf life products was very low. What digital commerce actually has done has enabled not only quick delivery, but localized business models. And because of that, you are able to then come into short shelf life products. So if you look at, let's say, our ability to come and market a dosa batter today is so much easier than what if I had to do it through general trade and modern trade in the past.
Right.
Right. And in fact, because of the 3-4 year evolution of digital commerce, which has taken place, we are now pivoting into a whole host of new business models and a whole host of new business initiatives that can help us build a whole new different business aspect as far as processed foods is concerned. But so it's a very exciting platform.
So has it necessitated a completely new inventory management model for a company like yours?
Actually, it's necessitated us to completely relook at our organization.
Right.
So, I mean, if you follow us in the market, you would have seen that last quarter I spoke about a project Bolt that we have launched, right? It's we have basically, you know, did an assessment and we found that from a digital commerce framework point of view, we were not as good as what we are in general trade and modern trade. And when you benchmarked us relative to, let's say, some other companies which are doing very well in digital commerce, even though we are doing very well, I mean, our current contribution is 8.8% of our sales coming out of digital commerce, and we are growing at on an annualized basis above 40%. Now, in all fair terms, this is great growth and great development. But I personally believe that we are losing a huge opportunity out here. And therefore, we decided to do this Project Bolt. The idea out there was to restructure the organization. The idea was to relook at our technology capabilities, our people capabilities, and our ways of working. I'll give you, if you allow me a little space, I'll give you a little elaboration of that. Now, typically, the FMCG business in India has a long cycle time. When I say cycle time, it's the planning to delivery cycle time. So, companies like us work on a on a quarterly cycle times and work on monthly cycles. So our plans are quarterly and our executions are monthly. But when you come to digital commerce, the whole cycle is different. Our plans are monthly and our executions are daily. We need to have the ability to track 200 dark stores of a particular company and see what is the level of availability that
right.
we have. Because none of them are keeping very high levels of stock. Stock in a dark store is kept based on the velocity of the product.
Correct.
So we have to track the velocity of our products at a dark store level on a daily basis and then influence supply of those goods to these dark stores. And we are talking about 200 dark stores of a single quick commerce guy. We have four to five and now six of them who are getting into this. So you multiply that effort, six to eight times, and that's the level of change in intensity of the organization that is required. So the way our organization is designed today, it's designed for an elephant to move very steadily.
Yeah.
And I need to move from an elephant who is moving steadily to an elephant who can run like a leopard.
Absolutely.
And I think that required us to really look at our business models and the organization in return. And that's what the need for this project that we had.
You know, Sanjay, you talked about innovation in that has been necessitated, and the cycle has also become rapid and shorter now, from ideation to the shop shelf. What does innovation in the food business actually look like? Because it's very easy to understand in the technology space, but in a food space, because it has got to do with tastes.
Yeah.
It has got to do with preferences. It has got to do with regional cultures, food tastes, etc. Is it challenging to build different, given the regional diversity in food tastes and palates and cuisines, is it difficult to innovate in the food business from a product point of view?
It can be difficult and can be very easy. It depends upon how you read and what are the categories that you are in.
Right.
Right. Mm. But let me speak from where we stand. Mm. Okay. We are in the traditional Indian food space. Right. When I look from what do I want my people to do? The core task in front of me and my people is to make everyday cooking easy.
Right.
Right. So that is what I talk to my people about. You know, when we are working with Orkla, our job is to make everyday cooking easy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you looked at it from an India footprint kind of, firstly, you should not. But if you did look at it from an India footprint, you're talking about infusing complexity in your thinking, which is thinking about 29 different states, 29 different cultures, 29 different taste palettes which are coming through, and recipes which are coming through, and so on and so forth. Now, you are from Assam. I am from Delhi. We work as a business in South. You know, before I joined, and I don't know whether you know about this, do you know a product called Pulyogre?
No.
You are from Assam. You would have probably heard of it. I had not heard of it till I joined actually MTR.
Yeah.
Now, Pulyogre is a daily staple as far as Karnataka is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I cannot take Pulyogre and start marketing. We are available in Assam. We are available in Delhi. We are available in Jammu and Kashmir. But the fact that you as a consumer, it's not part of your culture, you will never consume it.
Right.
And therefore, I think what we have done is we have chosen to define ourselves as a regional brand because food is regional in nature. Even the food between Kerala and Karnataka is different. Mm. Kerala is, appams, idiyappams, the kadla curries and the whole Kerala fish curry and non-vegetarian and food is there. Karnataka, our entire tenet on MTR is very different. It's about bisibele bhat, wangi bhat, pulyogare, sambar, rasam, dosa, idli, and so on and so forth. So, since cuisines are different, and we chose to actually focus our organization into a regional footprint and said that, okay, let's take that as the first step and build ourselves. So, we find that Karnataka as a state today has 65 million people. The GDP of Karnataka has, on a per capita basis, is 1.9 times better than the average GDP of India. So, southern part of India contributes 30% of India's GDP. So, we are talking about affluent people out there. So, you have a sizable population, you have a sizable per capita income, and which leads you to a sizable, economically viable size for building a business. So, our entire take on building business is actually to go local and build ourselves locally. Now, with these frames in mind, the entire innovation strategy then becomes far more simpler for us to do.
Right,
it's about going deep into the states, understanding the regional cuisine very well, and building it. So even a state like Karnataka today, you may think it's only one cuisine, but there are actually five sub-cuisine cultures. There's a North Karnataka cuisine culture, there's a Mangalore cuisine culture, there's a, I like to call it Kurgi, but it's called, let's say Kurg. The region Kurg has a cuisine culture, and then the South Karnataka has a cuisine culture. What we represent truly is the South Karnataka cuisine culture. So still we are doing innovations in Karnataka that are actually talking to different sets of consumers in Karnataka. So we have a huge opportunity in front of us. When I joined Orkla, the size of business in MTR was about 180 crores, right? Today we are doing close to about 1400-1500 crores of turnover, and we are amongst the top five FMCG companies in Karnataka, and still there is a huge headroom to go. So what we have done is we have simplified the framing of innovations and then put that. So that is one lever of our growth. The second lever of our growth, where innovations play a very important play, is of course food is very regional, but today you would consume idli dosa in your house. It's probably a weekly habit in Delhi or a fortnightly habit in Delhi. Your ability and exposure to this cuisine has happened because you have traveled, you have tasted, and you've liked. There are more restaurants that have opened around your ecosystem and you love the cuisine. In fact, masala dosa was at one point of time the national dish of India because a large number of people are consuming it. And today we are seeing that, you know, that today we are seeing that small towns, there is a huge capability, need for having idli dosa at your house. So we are now starting to build a platform through the digital commerce universe, which is enabling us to reach out to consumers and bring foods which are in more convenient format, which is the convenience food platform that we are building.
Right.
So that's the way we are looking at our business, and that's the way we are looking at innovation. So see how we can enable people who are not from the culture also to access the cuisine.
And who do you think are your competitors?
Ideally, I like to say no one.
Okay.
But there are people who are competing with us with different frames. Mm-hmm. Typically, we compete with local players because our center of gravity is in the south. 70% of our business comes from the south. 50% of the business comes out of Kerala. 40 to 50% of our business comes out of Karnataka. Some comes out of Kerala. So the people we compete with are largely local brands. Brands like GRB, Jam, brands like Teju, brands like Archie. In Kerala, we are competing with a brand called Brahmins, Nirapara, Kitchen Treasures. Probably brands you've never heard of.
And
the large multinationals that you know of are not really a competitive base for us in this business.
And what about your national ambitions? Because 70% of your business come from southern India. But what about your national ambitions? How do you reconcile or make it compatible with diving deep into regional depths?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question, Gaurav, and that's a current frame of work that we are doing. As I said, food is regional. So trying to take a particular food national is going to be largely talking to people who are going to be experimenting with foods, right? But we do see that there, you know, when you look at Indian food, right? What are the foods that actually migrate across India? And you'll see that no one cuisine really migrates across India, but there are dishes that migrate. So idli and dosa migrated, sambar has migrated, right? Vada pav starting to migrate. What else has migrated? There are very, very few things which have migrated, of course. So, but I must say that the current culture, you know, I believe that we are at the cusp of a generational change in India. Today, almost over 60% of the consumers today are millennials and Gen Zs. Now, they come in with a whole different mindset. And they also come in with a much lower level of knowledge as far as cooking is concerned. Okay, they find Indian cooking very cumbersome. So, brands like us are actually trying to bring foods which are from our regions in a far more convenient and easy format.
Right.
And in our minds, I think today, if you look at adoption of food in India, things that have got adopted by consumers have been, and which have really got a national footprint, are things that are convenient.
Right.
So you look at a noodles category. It was very easy to make, put it in water, boiling water, it's done. We've seen various countries, noodles now reaching everywhere. So that category has exploded. You see some level of Western breakfast come into our lives because it was very simple. You had a box, you pour it out in a bowl, you added milk to it, and you could then quickly have your breakfast, right? So I think the core need for us, if we have to go to national, and that's what our entire thinking is to ensure that we are able to make food more convenient to people, right? Having said that, we are focusing ourselves on the convenience food platform on three key platforms. We are looking at breakfast as a platform because that's a huge consumption occasion. We are looking at desserts as a platform, sweets, and we are looking at meals as a platform. So these three things actually cover 75 to 80% of the food consumption that happens amongst a consumer. In breakfast, we have been the pioneers in this category.
Right.
Okay, we have three platforms in breakfast. We have two platforms in breakfast. We have the dry batters, we have the wet batters, and then we have a product like upma and poha, which has been constructed in a way where you just need to add hot water. So we are talking to the hot water generation in a way that you are able to deliver a product with in a format that is familiar to them.
But the nutrient value is not getting eroded there, right? Or not getting lost in any way?
See, any food you process tends to lose
nutrient value.
And in my mind, I'm using the definition of process not just in a factory,
right,
but even in your kitchen.
Right.
When you cook it on high flames and other things, you lose.
Yeah.
So you have an intrinsic value of the food that comes to you. Okay? And that value, you get it at home and you get it also through packaged foods. So there is no difference so much in terms of, it's just that I don't send my home cooked food to a lab to check out what the nutrient values, and I believe that I have made, so it has to be fully nutritious.
Right.
Okay. So I think that's a whole different discussion, and I would not like to delve into that.
What about surrounding current global macroeconomic environment? There's clearly the environment is choppy, shaky, and uncertain. How has it affected the FMCG sector, and particularly the food FMCG sector?
My perspective on that is very different. My perspective is that we are here to manage businesses in an uncertain macroeconomic environment. Okay, so whatever happens, I think it's our job to manage it. Right. Having said that, I have to tell you that some of the decisions, I mean, if I go back about 9 months to 12 months, the macroeconomic conditions were much tougher at that point of time. We had a high level of inflation. We had a consumption squeeze in the country, and the FMCG sector was underperforming at that point of time. Then the government took some very good steps. Okay, it cut GST, brought it down to 2 slabs, right? Most of the food products came into 5% GST, so all of us rolled back prices. Made things cheaper for the consumer. We saw inflation soften up in the first quarter of this year, and we saw interest rates come down, which released a lot of cash flow for the average household because you are paying house loans and other interests for higher loans. So the consumer then came in with a lot of cash, and I think all of that has had a very strong positive effect on the FMCG sector. If you look at the results that are coming out now, we have not yet declared, but you will see most of the other results that have come out, all have been very good results. I mean, they've been double-digit growths coming across most companies. And what we also see is that there is a tailwind on demand, right? So the demand tailwinds are there. Overall, what we had seen growths coming out of metro towns, we had seen growths coming out of rural. Rural was doing very well, but the TC1 towns and the rest of urban towns were not doing well.
Right.
After 6 to 8 quarters, we are starting to see demand resurgence in these things.
Oh, yes.
We thought that it was hit by macros, but there is a demand resurgence on this. So across all town classes today,
right,
we are seeing a demand resurgence coming back. Okay. Having said that, Then we had the West Asia crisis in late February, early March.
Right.
That led to a whole host of cascading effects. Typically, India does not get hit by global events very hard, unless the oil prices go northwards. Oil prices did go northwards. The government has not taken action for a very long time. It delayed action on prices. So logistic prices have not really, now they have taken 7.5-8 rupees in terms of petrol prices. So you're seeing some level of inflation come in from logistics costs, not very high. But the main thing that got hit was plastics.
Right.
Now in food, plastics is not just a packaging, it's a preservation system.
Absolutely.
And it's absolutely mandatory for us to use some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Plastic prices went up by almost 45%.
Okay.
And as a result of that, coupled with the raw material prices and spices going up,
right,
we had to take a lot of price increases in the cycle. So we have taken all those price increases, but despite taking price increases, we are not seeing a demand
squeeze.
Slowdown,
okay,
a squeeze coming in.
But so, have you absorbed those cost spikes, or have
not
you passed
really.
It on?
I don't think they were small enough for us to absorb them. They were very large
right.
spikes and. The only way to do that was to manage the pricing to the consumer. So, some places we have taken direct price increases, some places we had to do some pack price adjustments to ensure that the unit price does not move too much for the consumer. But in general, things are currently on a better platform than now. To add to the speculative side of environment, you are still talking about El Nino, you're talking about a 30 to 40% deficiency in monsoon, which is going to hit the country. We may see some hit on farming, but the real truth will only emerge in the later part of the year, because farming has got to do with not just absolute monsoons.
Right.
It also has to got to do with the dispersion of monsoons
right.
and the quality of monsoons that you grow up in get in the growing regions of
absolutely the green bowl. Yeah.
Yeah. So if that green bowl gets good reasonably good monsoons, you may actually see better crops.
Absolutely.
So it's actually at a speculative level. So therefore, we are not addressing it at this point of time. We are saying that as and when those things come, we will take care of that.
And finally, what are the three things, if you were to identify three things which are going to propel your company's next phase of growth, what would those three things be?
Yeah, you are asking me live questions as they are running in our mind. So, I think I'd like to spend a little time on this by telling you that, you know, we've been on a journey in India. Orkla has been on a journey in India. We've acquired MTR, 180 crores, built it up, acquired Eastern, integrated it, we've built our journey ahead. Last year, November, we listed our company. All part of a well thought out strategic process that we have done.
Mm.
Having listed the company, we are now starting to chart the next phase of growth
mm-hmm.
as far as the company is concerned. But we are very clear, we as Orkla India, we want to be a company of multiple local brands in our portfolio. So we will be looking at adding more businesses in our portfolio as we go ahead. Which should help us widen our footprint. So, we certainly do have pan-India ambitions, but those pan-India ambitions are going to be built by acquiring more local brands, building partnerships with them, and ensuring that we are able to take that ahead. The second lever for us in terms of the transformation in business that we are doing is really about ensuring that we have the right capabilities and the right capacities in the business, and that is about the transformation that we are driving in terms of our channels, transformation that we are doing in Kerala, or the Project Bolt, which is a transformation with the digital commerce channel that we are doing. So these are two very important levers, and the final lever is really, as I said, that the market around us is changing. The new consumers which are coming in want more convenience food, so a huge big innovation agenda and transformation in convenience food is the third lever. And I think combined, when I look at these three levers, these are three levers are going to help us become a bigger food company in India with a much wider footprint than what we have today.
Absolutely. Wish you all the best for that. And thank you so much, Sanjay, for sharing your deep insights and perspectives on a range of issues. Thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us.
My pleasure, Gaurav. It's been truly a very nice session. Thank you.
Thank you.